Hello and welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe podcast. I'm Cetra.
And I'm Boom.
Yay!
Yay! And boy, do we have a Charlie Foxtrot of an episode this time, don't we?
We do. We have Air Part 2, which apparently on the DVDs is run into Air Part 1.
Yeah.
So if you have your collection at home and you're watching this, you may be wondering why this is two separate episodes, but there was a break.
Yeah.
Really, there was.
And on Hulu, there are two different episodes, so.
So if you're, if you're now marathoning it now that it's available through the internet, this should be more sensible to you.
Yeah.
So we start kind of exactly where we left off, in a gate room full of scared, angry people.
With Becker, my new favorite, because he's like, I'm a fucking cook. I'm not a soldier.
Yeah.
Well, he's like a soldier, but not really.
Yeah, he's a soldier whose assignment was the mess.
Right. And then James continues to not get respect.
Yeah, yeah. So I have, my first note is Scott is actually a super good leader. He takes action and does things.
True.
And then the very next thing he does is turn to the girl he was having sex with not 12 hours ago and pretend he doesn't know her name.
Such a dick.
So classy.
I don't. No wonder James kills him in her paranoid fantasies later.
Poor James.
I feel bad for her because even the fandom only know her as big boobs.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel bad for her because of that particular physical attribute. It does not look like she has a good supportive bra with her.
No, and because I'm pretty sure. No, she would have had time to put a bra on after Scott left, wouldn't she have?
Yeah, I mean, it depends whether she wanted to put a bra on if she was on, like, her time off or something,
right.
But...
Oh, that would suck.
I assume you would put on a bra before going to battle stations, so...
I don't know, usually battle stations are pretty urgent.
Either way, poor thing.
Yeah. The Rush is amazed at his glasses, and then he, looks really suspicious, and then walks away very suspiciously.
Yeah, yeah, that's my note where I said, oh, this is Rush's first disappearing act. There will be many.
You should just call him Houdini.
And I proceeded to call him a shifty bastard because he's the one that had the communication stones.
Right. Well, he's obviously worried about which way it would go. There's only one reason he would do it alone. Is because he doesn't know what O'Neill's going to say to him.
Yeah,
so
that's
it's better
true.
Not to have cooperation in that case. Shifty when bastard.
He also, it's quite likely that he wasn't sure the stones would work.
Oh, that's true.
Because he had no way of knowing how far away they actually
were. Look how nicely
were.
We paint Rush. We're like, oh, he was just concerned about morale.
We should just call this podcast Rush Apologist Society.
I was gonna just call it Rush Trash. Or Trush.
No, nobody that likes Nicholas Rush is trash. It means we're all highly intelligent, intellectual people.
Who don't eat or sleep and probably smell very bad. Who wear vests. Lots of vests.
Yeah. Well, just the one vest, but all the time.
What I love about that scene, though, is that there is literally a guy whose only job is to sit there.
Yeah. That actually becomes a kind of significant plot point, because within a couple of episodes here, we see that Telford is constantly taking shifts being that guy.
I know.
To the point where other people are noticing and saying, hey, go home. Hey, someone else can take this.
Yeah. That's how you know he's a shifty little bastard at that point.
Yeah, by the end of the season we find out why. And that it was...
What about that guy, though, that Rush enters, essentially? Like, he just got in, he's like suddenly just in a really dark room. He doesn't know where to go.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I wonder. Like, they don't cover that at all for that first switch.
So obviously he just stayed in that room and was like, I hope no one tortures me.
My guess is, in all honesty, Rush probably locked him in.
Probably.
That's probably why he took the stones and ran away, was so that, like, you know, worst comes to worst, everybody else is in the gate room, there's some dude banging on a door halfway across the ship, no one's gonna know.
That poor guy is probably never ever gonna work that job ever again. He's like, I was reading this magazine, and then suddenly I was in a room, and it was like barely any oxygen.
Yeah, random doctor number 12.
And I couldn't get out of the room, and then O'Neill's like, yep, that sounds like Rush.
Yep. O'Neill's like, yeah, you get what you signed up for.
You knew the job.
It could be worse.
So Scott goes exploring, and I love Riley again. I always love Riley, even though I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, Riley's real good, actually. She's like,
do we have to open doors?
Yeah, and then Riley is proven totally right.
Right.
You know, like, oh, we opened it. Oh, wait, it's a vacuum in there. Oh, shoot, quick, close it.
Wait, so our symbolic logic and our symbolic language is derived from the ancients. They have said that many, many times. So if we think that red means bad, shouldn't they think red means bad?
It's a, you know, Scott makes the point that it could just mean it's jammed. And that the ship, you know, would love them to open it.
You said don't touch anything, Scott.
But, yeah, well, Scott is definitely a do as I say, not as I do, lieutenant.
Right, right. Captain Kirk without all the swashbuckling.
Yeah, a little bit. There's some episode later, he gets called Captain Marvel, I think.
Which Captain Marvel? There's a couple.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's Rush that's calling him that. So I'm like, how do you even know that? You don't know anything about culture.
Well, no, he listens to opera. He listened to opera in the last episode.
He doesn't know anything about pop culture.
That might be a fan fiction consideration of Rush. I mean, yeah, I don't think he uses a whole lot of pop culture references, to be fair.
What he tends to roll his eyes or completely ignore anything that Eli says that's related to pop culture, is a lot.
I bet he said Captain Marvel but had no idea what it meant and if it was applicable.
Oh, maybe. Maybe he just heard Captain Marvel before and thought...
He was just searching around for something suitably sarcastic.
So I guess we then have this confrontation in the gate room where Rush comes back and says, oh yeah, I have these communication stones. I went to Earth. I talked to Colonel O'Neill. I'm in charge.
Right. You kind of have to admire that conviction in himself.
Oh, yeah. I am going to stand up on these stairs in front of 80 terrified people and say, I am the boss of you.
Who don't like working with him.
Oh, yeah. Who already don't like or trust me. And say, I'm in charge.
What kind of fucking cojones do you have, Rush?
Yeah.
The biggest and most Scottish of cojones. Yeah. What's interesting to me, though, is that Rush wants a clear chain of command now, as long as he's at the top of it.
Yes. You are so right.
But, like, it's kind of awfully funny how he changes his mind about chain of command.
I don't think he wants a chain of command so much as he wants to be in charge of himself.
Oh, and the only way he thinks he can do that is if he commands everybody else.
Yeah, by being in charge of everybody. I mean, because his first order to everybody is like, hey, let's all not hang out here.
Right.
Let's go find quarters and stuff.
I think, no, wasn't it do something useful? And they're like, what the fuck does he mean about that?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it does not take long for Rush to lose control of the room, unfortunately.
He's not a great leader of men.
Yeah, he wants so much to be a good leader, but the instant stuff starts to degrade, of course, Scott has to step back in and say, hey, I was left in command by the military leader.
Right.
All these other people with guns, they're going to do what I say. So how about the rest of you chill the fuck out?
Oh my god, it's such a potent memory. I mean, sorry, a potent metaphor for like shit like Portuguese history. Spanish history a little bit too. Egyptian history.
It's in a lot of ways it's sort of foreshadowing the rest of the show. Because there are these really quick power swings.
Right.
Like, okay, a bunch of people are on Rush's side. A bunch of people are on Young's side.
No one's ever on Camille's side, because everyone hates HR.
I don't know. Ray is on the side that almost successfully takes civilian control of the ship.
If Rush was just not a good person, they would have taken care of the ship. Oh, that's my comment that I made last episode, that Scott may not like Rush, but I think he does want to follow somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, even in that it gave him someone to push back against and say, hey, no, okay, here's what I'm doing.
Right. Well, I think they would have had a good relationship. Like, I feel like Young and Rush are two at loggerheads all the time. I feel like Scott and Rush would have had a better working relationship. Because Scott is a lot more reasonable sometimes about the flexibility of the chain of command.
Yeah, I agree and I don't, because I think
Rush would eventually walk all over him.
Rush was never going to respect Scott
True.
because Scott is too idealistic and too whatever.
I don't think Scott would have ever left him on a planet to die.
Well, okay, you're not wrong. Scott and Rush's feelings would have been much less passionate about one another.
I was like, I'm betting Rush wouldn't frame Scott for murder.
Also true. No one would have believed him if he tried to frame Scott for murder.
Like, that sad little puppy dog, you
I
fucking
think
liar.
I do kind of like the tease of these first two episodes where they're like, "Oh, remember Stargate Atlantis where we told you one guy was going to be in charge and then we killed him? That's totally going to happen again." And then Young wakes up.
Yeah, he's a miracle he does though. He was pretty messed up. He has so not only does he have that seizure messing up his cognitive functions, but he has a concussion, definitely.
Yeah, he has a really severe, definitely severe concussion. He has temporary paralysis.
He shouldn't be making any decisions.
Yeah, he has a really hard time walking for the next, like, 6 or 7
Doesn't
episodes.
he use like a gun for a cane? Is that what I
I
remember?
believe so. There's a point where he goes to switch with Telford on the stones and leaves a note with an arrow that says, "Use cane." And I'm like, really? Okay. Young is back awake in episode 2, but TJ is definitely still freaked out about him.
I mean, this whole situation is just so unfair for her. I mean, it's unfair for everybody, but I feel like it's 400 times more unfair for TJ than everybody else.
Yeah, TJ's is real bad. James is real bad. I mean, the women on Destiny really, like, their lives are just kind of shit.
I worry about that time of the month for them, honestly.
Yeah, I
Who was
mean.
thinking about that survival need?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that I wonder about watching this show. One is consumer-grade lubricants and condoms. Do you have any?
Probably not, because it was a military mission and they don't like fraternizing. But
Yeah.
civilians, they would have been allowed to.
Yeah, so maybe the civilians brought some. I mean, maybe let's assume that Chloe's on birth control and had like a month of pills with her.
Just in her pocket that
Just, well,
night.
I mean, she does have her purse. She has her purse and her coat.
Okay, I didn't remember the purse.
Because at some point we see her, like, trundling down a thing looking like she's, running out to the supermarket from Harvard. Yeah, man, it just, there's an awful lot of sex and fraternizing with no kind of protection or thought given to any of that. Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know, if the stuff that could be used to filter the air didn't make it with them on their supply evacuation? Did the box of tampons make it? Like, you've got enough female crew that you would have had to bring some.
Oh, I don't know. That worries and upsets me, but whatever. It's not like bleeding's the end of the world. They can use
Yeah, I
cloth
mean,
and stuff.
yeah, they do have.
Do they
Let's
have washing
assume.
machines?
Well, I assume you could use the shower magical cleaning mist for your clothes. This got real deep and real gross.
Right, sorry, we'll go back. We'll go back. Camille and Greer have their showdown. Yeah, those two are never gonna get along because I'm
O'Neill?
betting they both feel they're in the right. Sorry, well, Camille is her first name.
Oh, Camille. Sorry, Ray. Yes. I heard O'Neill and was like, Jack is not on this ship.
Jack is glad he's not on this ship.
Yeah, we get to see a big chunk of the supplies they brought through and that there's some additional ancient supplies on the ship. And meanwhile, it becomes clear that some people are not so happy that Greer's back on active duty.
He scares the crap out of me. Like, I grow to like him later on as he kind of softens up from his an imprisonment that he obviously didn't think was fair.
Yeah, well, he definitely has some issues in terms of interacting with people. He would much rather point a gun at you and say shut up than you know, listen to what you have to say.
Right. I think he feels that his superiors are not quick enough to raise their gun and threaten.
Yeah. The one good thing about Greer is that he will follow orders.
Right.
We watched him stand down last episode when Scott told him to, and...
But what the hell is Camille thinking, though, when she... Sorry, I'll say Ray. What the hell is Ray thinking when...
Oh, it's fine either way. I can switch to Camille, but...
But what the hell is Ray thinking when she stares down Greer and she's like, you can be imprisoned again. Does she really think she has any power in this situation? She's from HR.
Well, she's on the IOA commission, though. And that's the International Oversight Authority.
2 billion light years away, or however far it is. Like, Greer is going to be more reactionary.
Yeah, I mean, we're still so early that I think they're still...
thinking.
A lot of posturing and politics going on, you know, expecting that they might get back soon.
Right.
They might have reinforcements soon. Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily the best idea for her, but I think she had to make a stand somewhere.
Right.
And at least she had to do it publicly where other civilians could see her.
Yeah.
To put herself in a position of authority, at least over them.
Right. No, that makes sense. You're right.
Because even, you know, I don't think she expected to accomplish anything with Greer.
No.
What she expected to accomplish was, as soon as Scott and Greer walk out of that room, anybody else that's upset can come to her, and she can be that civilian contact point.
That is a good point. Good job, Cetra.
And that's, yeah, I've played characters like that before. Mm. You know, and that's how you're thinking politically, is like, let's make myself someone that other people will want to talk to. And
no, that makes sense.
See where we go from there.
So next, Young can't feel his legs. We kind of talk about that. And then the Kino.
Oh yeah, Eli discovers the fly camera balls.
I found out what those mean. It's like derived from Kino Pravda, which is a Russian form of, I would say, documentary, and it means like film truth.
Oh, okay.
So the reason that he calls them Kino is because he's using it basically as a documentary tool, right?
Yeah.
As he gets yelled at about much later.
Yeah, they explain it like one time and then they go, yeah, I don't want to hear about it anymore.
Well, he doesn't even like, get through explaining it. He's just like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, Matt's like, yeah, I get it, whatever.
Right, right. You don't get it, Matt. And then he tries to explain it again, and they're like, nope, shut up, you don't want to hear. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a Kino, okay.
I do love that, like, Eli's like, here, do you want one? And Scott's like, this is not a gumball machine. And I'm like, are you sure, Scott? Because it really looks like a gumball machine.
Yeah. A really cool gumball machine full of flying cameras.
I love it.
And I don't know if they have them on your DVDs. Somewhere I have, they made these web-only, like, behind-the-scenes things.
Right.
That were all, you know, theoretically filmed from the Kino, which are really cute.
I believe they're on there, I just haven't watched them yet.
Okay.
Is the next scene the shuttle? They find the shuttle? Where the...
I believe so.
The shield isn't 100% effective. So where do you think that damage on the shuttle came from? I'm assuming the Nakai?
Or yeah, a space collision? I mean... yeah, I assume being out in low power mode for as long as they have, there's definitely been just debris.
Right.
That's gotten through. And they say that it looks like it's been through a battle.
So it's so it may have
been, yeah, Nakai, or in season 2 there's these drone things also,
mm-hmm,
that are like programmed to attack. So that may be part of it.
Huh. Well, wait, hold on. Wouldn't that terrify the shit out of you if you saw a ship that was kind of exploded on top of your ship?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're, like, they can physically see that the shield is the only thing between them and the vacuum of space.
That's scary.
And that's an open doorway to all the living corridors of the ship.
Right.
Like, it seems like you'd be immediately concerned about the shield integrity and the power consumption on the shield.
Do we know if the Nakai have ever been on that ship? Because I almost wonder if somehow they got on once.
There is no information about that in the show.
Okay. There is enforced over distance, that, but that's
I was
not...
going to say, yeah, I kind of want to pause and go, we're going to talk a lot about the canon that exists in our heads, which is not always 100% true to show canon, and that the fanfiction author Clean White Room and her massive epic Force Over Distance are entirely to blame for.
Right. So that's why, like, last episode, I was like, sometimes we're going to have difficulty trying to sort out reality. Yeah.
And that's part of the joy of watching the show is, like, seeing what's really, really canon and what, you know, could be interpolated.
Right.
So Young is still sick.
Doesn't know where the scholarship is because he's a jerk. I'm sorry, I am unforgiving when it comes to Young and his personal life, and I always will be.
Yeah, well, TJ deserves better, and better she shall receive, so...
Yay! Can't wait for second season. back to Chloe. Stop taking your pills, Dad.
So Chloe's dad is in a real bad place where
if he stops taking pills, he'll have a heart attack, right?
Yeah, he needs blood thinners for his heart. He needs to not be on blood thinners in order to stop internally bleeding.
That sucks, Gavin.
And that puts you in a real bad place.
Right.
Which is going to be relevant by the end of the episode, so...
Right.
He's... You know, there are some really good conversations with him and Chloe. It's clear that
she loves him.
She's more of a scared little girl than she'd like to be, and he loves her and is a good father.
Right. Well, you find that especially in the Parasite episode that I can't remember the name of.
Yeah.
Where she, like, actively knows he's an hallucination but doesn't care.
Yeah, she's like, that's fine. I really want to have a chance to talk to my dad again.
Yeah. It's such a shame that he's Shooter McGavin. Like, it's really unfair for people to look at actors and be like, I can't see you past what you were in this one movie. But at the same time, you're like, oh, how could Shooter McGavin be
a good person? I'm glad that I've never seen this movie. Because I don't mind him. I mean, I don't like the political side.
Right. He's still smarmy.
But
I think he's smarmy in a way.
He's a little smarmy, but he's still good. He's genuinely... trying to do a good thing.
Right.
I think he would have been a powerful ally for, you know, Ray and the civilians to have had on board.
Right. No, he would have... That actually might have sorted things out much easier if he was still...
Yeah, it would definitely be a much different show. So, what's going on in the rest of the ship is that they've discovered that all the air filtration systems are full of nasty black sludge.
Right.
Because
they've been running for years past their expiration.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why they would have. Like, you'd think the ship would have just shut that stuff down.
Right. Or also, shouldn't be anything producing carbon dioxide in that environment.
Yeah, for it to need to scrub. But, you know, we don't know if there were fires from whatever attacks happened.
Oh, that's a good point.
If, you know... We know that later some little parasites get on and are consuming water and air.
Right.
So there could have been something else like that at some point. Like,
well, I mean, if they are consuming that, there has to be a byproduct of it, which may be carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Or other poisonous gases. So maybe that's why the scrubbers are so monumentally fucked.
So, yeah. I mean, it's also, it's looking like it could have been thousands of years easily. That Destiny's been out here, so we're not talking about, like, a 1914 Ford that wasn't taken care of, which already wouldn't be running. We're talking about, you know, a year zero Ford.
Right. Well, good job, Destiny. You tried your best.
I mean, yeah, Destiny's been trekking on out here.
I mean, this is so Atlantis right now, isn't it? It's also Battlestar Galactica, but, like, with Stargate Atlantis, the first thing you find out is the shields are failing.
Yeah.
And then, thank God, ancient technology knows how to protect you.
Yeah. I mean, and the interesting thing, it's either in this episode or the next one that they, you know, somebody says, oh, well, you probably just can't activate this because it requires a Lantian gene.
Right.
And Rush goes, no, this is way before that.
Damn, that's so old. And like, lucky for them, because I don't believe anyone has the gene on that population.
Yeah. I wonder... if Rush does, But
that's a fan theory that I know of.
Yeah, there's no evidence of
there's
that.
There's no evidence.
Because it's not required.
Right. Like, because Franklin gets in the chair and he most likely doesn't have that gene whatsoever.
Yeah, well, the chair doesn't exactly treat him real nicely, though.
No. Well, because he's not Atlantean. But I don't know. It's also interesting to me that this is a lot like Battlestar Galactica, which I know you've not seen a whole lot of. But basically, once the first miniseries to establish everything is over, the first episode is there's no water. Which I know is an episode from now. And this is air right now.
But... yeah, I mean, I like that about the beginning of this show, that, like, it's in order of priority.
Right.
Right? Like, the first three episodes are just about making sure there's air to breathe. Because without that, you're dead in a minute.
Right. No, exactly.
And then immediately after that, you're
like,
onto
shit,
water.
Well, shit, we need water.
actually, I think it's light and then water, but still.
Is it light after... I thought water was after air.
I'm pretty sure light is actually episode 4.
Oh, okay.
Which is, in which they find out how Destiny gets
Oh, and it drives into
power.
The star. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was an intense episode. We should not be talking about episode 4.
No, we are back to episode 2.
Again, they're talking about the shuttles leaking. Rush figures out that the only way they can close the door is from the inside, so someone has to die to do it. Then TJ tells Young what's going on. Young thinks, I definitely have the cognitive abilities to deal with this right now.
Yeah. Let me just haul myself up out of bed and start bossing people around.
Because I'm highly concussed. I just had a seizure. This is a good idea.
Yeah, and he's got it, like, this is only maybe, what, 4 hours or so since his seizure, so everything in his body aches.
Like, I've had... like, well, yeah, that too. But I'm just thinking about the concussion that he definitely has, because he was bleeding from the head after being thrown violently 20 feet.
You're not wrong.
Like, because you were... So Cetra is a very, very good person to me, and she was there when I got my last concussion. How was I with it when you picked me up?
You were really fascinated by video games. And...
more, I mean, patiently just... fascinated is how I would say it.
Yeah, you were definitely not on the top of your game.
No, and it was just a minor concussion.
Yeah.
And, like, driving made me sick, walking made me feel sick. Like, I just laid on your couch for, like, 3 days, didn't I?
Yeah, it was basically sit very still and make occasional comments while drinking tea.
I think I was asleep from almost all of it, I'm thinking.
But Young is a military man, and so...
he should be asleep. I mean, it's a false idea that you shouldn't fall asleep when you're in a concussion. You probably should.
Yeah, I mean, because you're the more still you can keep your brains while they heal, the better.
Ugh, I had that. My boss at the time was all like, oh, you're not supposed to sleep with a concussion. And I was like, are you a doctor?
Well, she was.
She was a doctor of bioanthropology, so she should know.
If you asked her if a Neanderthal could have a concussion, she would know the answer.
That's true. Basically, Young should not be doing any decisions at all.
Yeah.
Or be awake.
So he doesn't actually get up immediately, but people do keep briefing him on things and are now accepting his orders.
How dumb are you?
Young decides.
How dumb are you to accept his orders? He is concussed.
So everybody has a great conversation about how messed up the mechanism is and how they can't fix it. And then they tell Young, and Young decides that he will limp his way into the shuttle and kill himself.
I will die.
So,
Not
it's still teasing this Stargate Atlantis thing, like, right. Oh yeah, the young, attractive lieutenant is the one that's going to end up in charge. Don't worry about it.
I'm so glad Young isn't in charge. I mean, not Young. I'm so glad Scott isn't in charge.
I think Scott is pretty glad in the end that Scott isn't in charge.
Well, I think it's very evident that Scott doesn't like to be in charge, because I recall, I think later on Young goes planet side and leaves Scott in charge at some point. Doesn't he?
Well, he at least once takes Scott with him and leaves TJ in charge.
What?
She's also a lieutenant.
Yeah, but this is a whole Star Trek problem all over again.
Yeah,
Why
no,
is the
TJ's.
counselor the bridge officer? Why is she in charge of being
Yeah,
captain?
TJ, because TJ's the best.
Yes. No, I think TJ would make the best decisions, but
Yeah,
whatever.
so they swear that they're not gonna let Young do it, and meantime, the senator has decided that he's gonna go,
Right.
and
Well,
he's, yeah.
and everyone hates Rush right now because they have like this list. Because Rush being Rush, like, you know what? He's right. Like, come up with a list of people and their injuries and what their skills are, and
Yeah.
sacrifice the one that can give them the best chance to keep going. He's right. I'm sorry.
Or
He's 100% right. He's just
yeah.
so shit at the emotional subtleties of it all because he doesn't
Well, and
have time for that
it's
shit.
exactly, yeah, he's done the whole calculation.
Right.
This brilliant, brilliant man. He's figured it out. He knows what has to happen, and he probably in his head has a short list of, two people that it should be.
Right.
And so his version of subtlety is not saying who it should be,
Right. It's
right?
saying
Saying,
you draw up the list,
let's ask for
and I'll
volunteers.
bring you up to the speed of where I am that way, instead of being like, okay, it's either Young or the senator.
And yeah, it just, it's rough. It's rough, and it's not really what anybody wants to be hearing right now. Nobody wants to be losing anyone else. A lot of them have just lost friends
Right.
within the last day.
Yeah, I'm still with Rush. Like, I don't care. Like, I know it's really hard and everything, but like, you have to like buckle down and just deal with the rationale of the situation as it
Yeah,
is.
it's absolutely true.
Right. It's just
But you
insensitive.
can't. It's insensitive, and it's very difficult to lead people that way.
No, and that's why he's such a shit leader.
And yeah. And it's also, this is one of the first times we see Greer not really being quite so flashy and sassy about things.
Right.
He's definitely,
I think he sees Rush's side to it.
I think he absolutely does.
Because.
And that's why he didn't really stop the senator getting through. I mean, he could have decked the senator. Senator would have gone down like
No.
a sack of bricks.
No, he made a decision, and since no one told him not to do it, really.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, the senator had a gun on him, so he had the excuse to.
Yeah, he absolutely had the excuse. They definitely, didn't need another injured soldier around.
Right.
God only knows, shooting bullets inside of a spaceship is not the greatest idea anyway.
Especially by right by where the leak is.
Yeah.
Franklin looks devastated when that happens, though.
Yeah, I mean, Franklin really wanted to be able to fix things mechanically, wanted to be able to save everybody. And it's a really good, it's an absolute picture of what three factions you have on this ship,
Right.
right? You have the military who's like, okay, we lost a man, but he saved everybody else. It's actually probably not that bad of a thing.
Right.
You have the scientist who's like, damn it, if I'd been a little smarter, if I'd been a little faster, I could have fixed this.
Right.
And you have the civilian who loses her shit.
Right.
And just like, Chloe then proceeds to go try and kick the shit out of Rush.
Well, hold on though. I love that about her. And I also love that she protects him later on. But is Senator Rush's body just always going to be there? Like, just preserved in the vacuum of space like that?
They discuss what to do with his body a little later, and I believe that that shuttle is eventually like
Jettisoned?
fired into a star or something.
Why couldn't they jettison it before? Oh, because the door wouldn't close.
Yeah, I believe it does get dealt with later, but I don't remember how.
How long is his body just like weakened at burning it across the stars?
Yeah, I don't
That's
know.
insensitive, Allison. But anyways, Chloe leaves to go kill Rush.
Yep, and she goes complete banshee on him. She tackles him, she kicks him.
Well, and Rush is just so shit at politics. Like, even though he's right as he's talking to her, this is not what she wants to
Yeah.
hear. It's not gonna help anything. All it does is make her angrier.
Yeah, he tries so hard.
Right.
Like, you can see him trying to be reasonable and calm and sympathetic, and he's so bad
And
at it.
nobody sees it that way.
Like, I feel for you. I do. But it was the right thing. I'm like, her dad just died.
Also, this ship is called Destiny.
Yeah.
This is our destiny. This project was super important to your dad. Rush, actually, Chloe was the one that suggested the project. She's the one that
Yeah.
convinced her dad to do the project. So, wrong words
He
there.
does. Yeah, Rush does look genuinely remorseful,
Right.
but because of who he is and the way he speaks, it's so easy to believe that it's an act.
Right. No, I agree.
We are the Rush Apologist Society, and we believe that he truly did feel bad.
I think he does and he doesn't. I think, like, this was the only solution. That was the
Yeah.
solution. And no matter what, Armstrong was probably gonna die.
I mean, I think you're right. I think it, again, right? He wasn't saying the right thing to be truly understanding or empathetic,
Right.
but he was trying to because the real asshole thing to have said would have been like, this is for the
Yeah, like,
best.
get over it.
Like, flat out, get over it. We all would have died. Instead, just he did and he would have died
He
anyway.
reminds
Peace
me
out.
a little bit of my dad. Like, my dad has this thing where when people are emotional, he just wants to fix it right away. Whereas you and I both know, like, sometimes time is what someone needs. Like, even just a couple hours to just finally come to grips with what's happened. And, like, Rush is like,
Yeah.
nope, we're gonna fix this now.
And that's a very broad strokes, in general difference between men and women,
Right.
that men generally want to be presenting a
I
solution.
think it's a broad strokes engineer thing because my dad's an engineer and I see it way more in
That's
engineer men than other men.
totally
Yeah.
fair. Yeah. And so after Rush completely fails to comfort Chloe, Matt goes and does not suck at being a human.
Yeah, good job, Matt. I'm not really sure how I feel about you eventually sleeping with her because she lost her dad, but good job, Matt.
Yeah, well.
You'll always have that ghost haunting your boner, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, especially as long as the body is on the ship. Salt and burn that shit, guys, come on.
I think he did a good job comforting Chloe. I still don't really get their relationship, but I'm hoping as I rewatch it, I'll understand better.
Yeah, so I actually have the opposite. I felt like this scene was actually really sweet, and it was showing a good kind of natural building of a basis that, yeah, on Earth, that relationship might have happened over the course of months or
Right.
years, but in this high stress situation, like you have a bonding moment like that, you're gonna stick to that
Right.
person.
Well, that's not the part I object to. Usually in TV shows, the timeline is usually where I'm like, but you only met each other. In this case, I just don't feel the chemistry, but I'm thinking it's gonna change on my second watch because, as we all remember, I wasn't a big
Yeah.
fan of Matt in the beginning at all.
Yeah, that's
So,
true.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I remember very little about Matt, from my first watch through. Like, I was so focused on Rush and Eli and the science
Right.
team, that really, like,
That is
now
a
that I'm watching it.
constant problem for me. I'm like, Atlantis, I really just care about Zelenka
If Atlantis was about Zelenka and McKay, I would watch it.
McKay. Yeah, but you hate with Johnny Shep.
Yeah, I have real problems with John Shepard.
He's my favorite Colonel O'Neill.
I'm the only person that prefers young. So.
No, Callie loves Young.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think she loves young more than John Shepard.
Oh, okay. Good point. Good point. Oh, I want to. Sorry. Can we go back to Rush and Chloe just real quick?
Oh, for sure.
The reason why I am in the RAS, the Rush Apologist Society, is because when she says, "I'm sure some lives have more value than others," Rush kind of just is like, I lost friends and they were all invaluable to me. And I
Yeah.
believed that. I don't think that was him politicking. I don't think he's good enough to politic like that.
I also liked that. And it was after this that I made my note about, like, Rush being concerned primarily with the big picture.
Right.
But he does feel that human life is invaluable.
Right.
He feels that loss very keenly.
But he's bigger picture than, say, Young is or anything else like
But
that.
exactly, he's so big picture that, like, individual people are tiny, invaluable ants.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's why Eli's good for him because I don't think Eli's smarter than him necessarily. I think they are both equally intelligent. But I
Yeah, they
think
have different
Eli's
skill sets for
way better
sure.
at the minutiae and the interpersonal relationships and because like Rush will just go by like a warning signal. He doesn't give a shit. And Eli's like, that's a warning signal. You
Yeah.
know? And I think that sort of relationship works well to successful results if only the politics of the situation wouldn't get in between with their science. Because they really have the professor
Yeah.
grad student relationship to me.
Yeah, and I think in a less fraught situation where Rush was being given more time to, tutor and mentor
Right.
one on one,
Right.
because he doesn't mind when Eli is the one person that's around.
Right.
Like, he sometimes does, but not as much as, say, when it's Volker.
Yeah. Poor
Which I think is
Volker.
next episode, that he just, like, screams at Volker.
Well, I think it's next episode where doesn't Eli basically throw Volker under the bus? Like you'd have to be an idiot to think that. And Volker's like, "Thanks, Bran. Thanks."
Oh, I don't remember that. We'll have to see when that
Oh, it's like
happens.
it's something that's supposed to be terribly obvious. And Volker's
Yeah.
just like, it wasn't to me, asshole." And I have like seven fucking doctorates or whatever he has.
Yeah. Well, he's the only actual honest-to-God astrophysicist on this boat.
Right.
Like, he, by all rights, like, should be the head of the science team, should be in charge of this and the exploring and the charting and,
Right.
anything that they're
But
doing.
somehow Rush's special math skills make him intelligent in all of the sciences.
Yeah, somehow Rush's special Destiny exclusive skill set and Scottish accent make him the boss of everybody.
Well, he certainly tries to be. Well, he definitely is of the science team for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So, next, oh, Camille is actually on Young's side at this point.
Yeah,
And that's interesting too.
my main note was that so as soon as we see Young get out of bed and start managing people again, what you notice in the difference between his and Scott's command styles is that he knows how to use other people's skills. He immediately goes to Rey and gives her a job to keep people calm, that's, gives her the authority she wants
Right.
and trusts her skills to interact with people.
Right.
And says, "I need your help." He, gives Eli specific tasks that Eli can wrap his brain around,
Right.
besides just, go over there, be useful.
Rush, you suck.
Yeah, which is really why this ship needs Young rather than anybody else they could have in
No, I
command
think
right
that's
now.
a good point. I guess to me, I was just interested that, Camille becomes anti-Young pretty soon-ish. But she
Yeah.
starts off completely on his side, like, we can't let Rush control the ship. And then later on, she's like, I don't know which side to
Yeah.
back. And then she's like, I'm gonna back Rush's side.
Yeah, and I think the question when Young gets framed for murder and then his, reprisal against Rush is clearly
Is where she totally flips.
yeah, it clearly switches his alignment in her
Right.
mind. To somebody who's not so good.
Like, I don't think she shifted because she felt right. I mean, sorry, that she felt Rush was the right choice necessarily. I think she did it because she found what Young did so abhorrent.
Yeah, she felt Young was definitely the wrong
And she
choice,
has
or
no
was
idea that Rush
consolidating.
framed Young, so, like, you can't fault her for that.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
If she did, then she probably would be like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah. Oh
Rey should
man.
just be the leader.
I wish Rey would be the leader, and that is why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is great.
Because you could be not doing it. I don't know if she can lead, though. I think she's really good at being a powerful bureaucrat, but I don't see her as a team leader necessarily.
Yeah, I think Given the right kind of people, I think she could absolutely be in command, but I don't think that she has what it takes to make military
Right.
decisions.
And also in this show, she has no one under her ever. She doesn't even she's not even like Lauren Roslin in Laura Roslin, sorry, in Battlestar Galactica where she has like a couple aides. Like she has nobody. She's this weird isolated loner that somehow has power only because when she communicates back to the SGC.
Yeah, because she has power on that angle,
Right. And the only
of being an IOA representative.
Reason the SGC has any power over them, though, is because there's that possibility they'll get home and they can face court-martial. But if you think about it, like, Rey's power is super tentative. Like, eventually they're gonna realize that they aren't gonna get home, and, like, there goes her power. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing is the IOA really has control over how long the SGC continues trying to reach Destiny,
Right.
tr what kind of supplies they can send them, what kind of manpower they can devote to that problem.
Right. But I'm saying the
So it
ship
is.
itself could just decide we're not ever going home and there's no way they can get us anything and blah blah blah.
Oh, that's true.
Like,
At which point Rey is screwed.
her power structure could be undermined in so many, many, many ways.
Yeah.
And now I kind of get why she's so cagey with everybody.
Yeah. I mean, she definitely was never going to be someone that was on this mission,
Right.
right? And that leaves her more out of the loop than a lot of
Plus,
people.
everyone hates HR. I particularly do. I
Maybe so.
mean, I have
I
friends
don't
that work in
think.
HR, and in my mind, I'm like, they're just the exceptions.
So see, I don't think that all experiences that you have had are necessarily accurate to
Indicative of every other HR
the
department.
way a human resources department should function.
I hope so. So, anyways, yeah, Scott and Chloe. I really like that he says, "Tell me about your dad. I want to know about the guy who would die so I could live."
Yeah, who saved
And then
us?
Rush finds Eli, and Rush has no time for Eli's shit because Eli's like, "I watched a man die," and Rush is like, "Do you think
Yeah.
I'm unaffected by this? Get back to work."
Yeah. That's. Rush is so wonderful.
Well, it's true though. Like again, RIS, but. Like, they have a limited amount of time to solve the problem that this guy died to help them with.
It is not as limited as Rush would like them to think, and within an episode or two here, he is going to lose his shit due to not sleeping.
Right.
So, you could maybe take a little break, a little bit.
Right. But I think in this situation, because we don't have the benefit of that hindsight yet, right? And Rush hasn't lost sleep yet. Like, he's right. Like, keep working on the problem because we could be dead by
Yeah,
tomorrow.
we gotta find something.
And, like, he only
Yeah.
suspects that Destiny will take him to a planet where they could get, like, the scrubbing, whatever, chemical.
Yeah.
The carbon monoxide scrubbing chemical. So, but he's not sure, so he has to keep working on the premise that maybe that's not gonna happen. And then you have
Yeah.
Eli, like, Eli didn't really watch a guy die. Eli wasn't there. You know who watched the guy die? Franklin.
Yeah. Franklin was there. Chloe was there.
Right. Greer was
I
there.
think, I mean, in a lot of ways, Eli is seeing someone his age lose a parent.
And he's living it in his mind because he just left his
And
mom basically forever.
absolutely. Yeah.
No, I think you're
And
right.
he has nearly lost his mother before. He can imagine and probably has imagined exactly what Chloe is going through. He's not getting to sit down with her and with Matt and talk about his feelings.
Right.
He gets Rush and he just has to keep working.
And I have to say that's pretty indicative of a grad student and
So,
a professor relationship.
yeah.
I have rarely ever seen a professor be empathetic with a grad student's
Yeah.
problems
Or
or
sympathetic, or.
sympathetic or both equally important.
Yeah.
So, like it yeah. And also I have a feeling that Eli's thinking like because they don't know if they can get back. The prospects are looking really, really grim. So to him, it's almost like he lost his mother because he'll never see her again.
Yeah, and I think, they've been on the ship for long enough that it's starting to settle that, like,
Right.
they're not just going to be home at the end of the day.
Man, Eli needs to freak out about that. Like, he needs to, like, you fucking kidnapped me and then blackmailed me. Not to Rush, because Rush, well, no, Rush did do it. Yeah, that Rush for sure. If anyone's going to beat the shit out of Rush, it should be Eli.
Yeah, but Eli's too nice for that.
You would think Chloe was too nice for that, but she definitely... And it's not like Rush told that guy to get on the fucking ship.
Well, he also doesn't tell Franklin to sit in the chair.
Oh, so weird that he's good at manipulation, but not.
Yet he's really good at manipulation when it's one-on-one.
Like an individual level.
Or, yeah, when it's... a matter of putting out the idea of, like, he put out the idea that someone should volunteer.
Right.
That information got to Senator Armstrong.
Right.
And that's all that it took.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, good job. Good job, you bastard.
Yeah.
All right. But then Eli and Rush do seem to semi-bond after that conversation.
Yeah, because I think in a lot of ways, Eli just needs someone to tell him, like, hey, suck it up, go do this.
Right.
He needs direction so that he has something else to focus on.
Right.
And Rush is definitely willing to give him that, so.
I agree. So I guess the last scene is Riley keys up another gate. Young excludes Rush from this conversation because he already suspects Rush of purposely putting him on this planet. I mean, not on the planet, sorry. Purposely putting him on the ship.
Yeah.
Which is not a good sign this early on, you know?
Yeah. So the gate dials twice, right? They try to dial Earth.
Right.
And Rush stops them because it doesn't work.
Right. And he's saying, you're just, actually, you're killing us because now we're losing power.
Yeah. And then Destiny drops out of FTL and dials a gate for them.
Right.
And... Rush is like, no, this will be totally cool, guys. Just walk through.
Just
it'll be fine. Trust in the power that is Destiny.
There's a very religious quality about a man who's so logical and rational.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Rush either knows more about this ship than he ever tells anyone.
Right.
Or he just really, really has to believe in something. You know, because he gave up being there with his wife as she was dying to be here.
Right.
He risked all these people's lives to be here. He has to believe that it's meant to be this way.
Right. It's strangely teleological for a scientist.
Yeah, it's very strange for, someone who's so analytical and rational the rest of the time.
Right. Okay. So, then they send the Kino through, and they're like, oh my god, it's a MALP and not a documentary device?
Yeah, it's kind of a MALP, except for how it can't carry anything.
Yeah, that's true. Then we see Dr. Park for a brief second, which makes me happy.
Yeah, we get little bits of Park, and she gets so much more important later.
I think we get a little bit of Brody earlier on as well.
Yeah, and there was a tiny smidgen of Brody in episode one as well.
Yeah.
Like he walked along behind Rush or something.
What's weird is I have in my notes it says poor Franklin. Is Franklin? I don't remember. Did it end with Franklin being kind of upset?
Well, so Franklin first had to be there as the senator died, and then gets sent through the gate.
Oh, that's right. Now I remember. There's something vaguely insulting about how they said it, though, didn't they? Isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's because Young tries to assign who should go through, and then Rush says, we need good people here working on the other problems.
That's right.
But doesn't ask him to leave Franklin.
Poor Franklin.
Yeah.
So Eli wants to go through. Do you think it's because that semi-bonding moment with Rush is over and he's sided with Young at this point?
I think it's partially that. I think it's also partially, like, he's been sort of relegated to this, like, Eli's math boy. you know,
basically kind Rush's of thing. Butt boy for math.
Yeah, and he, I think he wants to, like, get that chance to go, actually, I mean, to see another world that's not going to blow up, presumably, right. And to be useful, because he's still in this place outside of the hierarchy.
Boy, is he going to regret that, as we know next episode.
Yeah, next episode's going to be real rough on everybody that walks through that Stargate in the last few seconds.
My favorite thing about that next episode is that someone had to apply sunburn makeup to David Blue every morning.
Well, yeah, and what I love is that actually going forward...
You see it, like, fading away.
You maintain that on everybody that was on that mission. Scott has it, too. Right.
We were noting right before this episode started that, like, how short everybody's hair is.
Yeah, early on you've got, you know, Rush's is just a little bit of a floof. It might actually have been a fashionable haircut right. once.
He's not quite to Jared Padalecki hair yet, but he's...
Yeah, Scott's hair is still super short and regulation. Volker's hair is neatly trimmed right. and not an angelic halo of blonde curls.
Right. I love his Cupid hair.
Yeah, he gets very very cherubic later.
You know what this is also? It's a Volkner apology.
I actually like Volker a lot.
I love him.
And when we get to the episode where everybody talks to the Kino and introduces themselves, like right. I have a lot of feelings.
I honestly feel like if this show was just about the science team, like if we had way more about Park and Volkner and Brody, I'm really happy with the show, but I would be 1,000 times happier.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a very different show,
right.
because it would be that show where you're like, oh, you know, damn military coming in messing
right,
things up.
Right, right. Whereas this is a show of like, no one's right, deal with the consequences.
Yeah. This is very like, hey, we're in a situation, there's no good answers. No, really none.
I'm gonna frame someone for murder.
Yeah, because there's no good choices, let me make some...
He almost got away with it if it wasn't for Young's random leaps in logic. Anyways, we'll get to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and that episode does not happen for a little while.
Yeah,
here.
But
we've
everything
still gotta...
is leading up to those episodes. That's why I keep mentioning yeah. it.
Yeah, and you definitely they deal with things in the right order, right? Mm-hmm. There are immediate crises like getting air, getting water, right. getting power for the ship, and then once they can...
And now friendship.
Once they can kind of win, then it's time for personal politics to fuck everything up.
Right. Until Time. Time is such a good episode. I can't wait till we do that one.
Yeah, Time and Human.
Well, anyways, do you have any closing thoughts on the episode?
In a lot of ways, because I know you said 1 and 2 are run together, right. but then 3 is separate. Right. 2 feels less satisfying as an episode ending for me.
Wait, are you meaning Eli's catchphrase in my mind? That was extremely unsatisfying.
Yeah, maybe. The end of episode 2 is kind of extremely unsatisfying. Because we've got a gate and we're going through right. it, but we don't get to know anything.
Right. Well, that's how they're making sure we watch the next episode.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think they knew it was an uphill battle, getting Stargate Universe made and done. Like, I think originally they didn't think that because, like, who doesn't love Stargate? But I think as they got further and further into production, they were like, this is not really Stargate.
Yeah, and it's a really amazing concept within the Stargate right. universe.
Right. It deals more seriously with the consequences that Stargate should be dealing with, I think.
Yeah, I mean... And we've discussed before, we'll discuss again, that these people, as Stargate characters, Rush and Young are not O'Neill and Jackson. There is no magical 11th hour solution that's going to pop out
right.
and save them every time.
Right.
And they don't necessarily function like there's going to be or like they believe in one.
It's the difference between The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. So the next generation, they just get on the ship and they leave. They don't deal with the consequences of whatever planet they just left. They go back to their perfect little Federation enclosed space, whereas DS9 is in one place, constantly stationary, and it has to deal with all the ever-changing politics within it. That's why Captain Sisko has to do things like assassinate Romulan ambassadors. Because he's basically a rush in that situation. He sort of, like, sees the whole big picture. And he can't just stop in a starship and go away, right? He has to stay there. He has to deal with all the politics of the situation. And that's what I think Stargate Universe is.
Yeah. It's definitely more of a DS9 or a Babylon 5 in terms of just being trapped in enclosed spaces with not only the situation that you're in, but the choices that you have to make and the repercussions of those choices. So,
My final thoughts, I think, are just the same that I had last episode. Yeah. Not a perfect pilot, but still good. So,
yeah, I mean, it's good. It introduces you to a lot of characters, and it leaves you wanting to know what the heck is going to happen.
I think it's a lot more emotional later on, because like when you rewatch it. I think when you first watch it, you're not emotionally invested in a lot of people, so it's a little hard to get into. But once you're into the series and you rewatch it, I think it's a lot more emotional.
Yeah.
And good.
Yeah. And definitely, if it's your first time through, just be in it for Robert Carlyle. It's worth
it. That's what I did.
Just love every moment of Rush and his sneakiness and whatever.
Right.
And know that the second time through, once you've seen the whole show, you're gonna have a lot of feelings about everybody.
So many feelings. So I think that's it for Charlie Foxtrot. Where can they find us, Miss Cetra?
We are at sgupodcast.tumblr.com.
Send us asks.
Send us lots of asks, because we want to know what we're doing besides just loving Rush a lot all the time.
We should just call it the Rush Podcast.
The Rush Apologist Society. We renamed
it. No, we've decided on Clusterfuck, damn it.
Yeah, no. Alrighty. Clusterfuck leaves a lot of room.
So much room. Anyways, bye!
Bye!